really interesting. Now, you've always been cutting edge. You were a pioneer in the women's movement way back when.
Right.
You were a pioneer in the computer technology field. I mean, you were working computers when people didn't even know what they were.
Yes, before IBM.
Before IBM.
Yes.
You're also a pioneer in the psychic realm.
That's right.
So what's new? What's happening in our world today that you are now a new pioneer of?
Yeah, well, I'm reading about... I love to read about science because when I read about science, I like to bring opposites together. And in this world, although not so much lately, but science and spirituality have always been opposing concepts. When I read science, my mind expands so that I can see new frontiers in the spiritual realm. So I it really takes me, and I think that's one of the things that science does. It takes you out of your own ego perspective and brings you into world thought. Or as Einstein would say, that's God's hands studying science, God's work.
But so psychic work does that also. Isn't that interesting? So they both have the same result.
Well, I think if you are studying science, it's very interesting to read psychic work. Because it gives you another perspective. In other words, if I'm only reading spiritual work and spiritual ideas, it keeps me in the same realm. But if I go into science, I may take ideas from there and apply it to the spiritual realm and get a new way of looking at it. It's a way of stepping out of the particular box you're in to see it from another perspective. And that's what I think bringing in different realms of thought, different realms of investigation expands whatever one you're particularly in. And that relates to what I'm going to talk about.
Okay.
Totally
related.
Do I get
to ask something?
You get to ask.
Okay.
Absolutely.
No, I just wanted to mention, because I know that you recently saw Deepak Chopra and Ram Dass, and they were doing a seminar, and a lot of it was the same new thought that you were coming up with.
Well, thanks to you, darling. I had started reading, I found this book in Borders that was about brain, the changes going on in brain science, and I thought, that's interesting, let me have a look at that. So I started to read it, and it was talking, which I will explain further, but it was talking about stroke victims and how they are now finding ways for people who are paralyzed by a stroke to be able to get them to move their limbs again. So here I was going to Ram Dass, Deepak Chopra, and I said, I got to bring this book to Ram Dass because he's had a terrible stroke and he's half his side is paralyzed. So, but then you called and you said, would I like to be on the radio? So then I started, as I was reading the book, I started having a lot of thoughts about how some of this scientific research could be applied to spirituality and other realms. So I sort of expanded my mind into other areas. Well, I go to Deepak Chopra and Ram Dass, and I go into Deepak Chopra's talk, and what is he saying? Just the same things that I had been thinking that I thought were original thoughts. And I thought, well, I guess synchronicity, you can't have any originality if you have synchronicity, because it was amazing. It wasn't just the things that were in that book. It was original thoughts that I thought I was having and he was stating at that time. So I was just shocked. And then
but
I gave
see, that's
yeah, go
an
ahead.
Experience of the universal mind, which as a psychic, that's the place when I do readings, and I'm sure when you do readings, that's where you go, and you connect with where all the information is available, and it comes through.
Right. And out in that realm, and we don't know if it's in the brain or outside the brain or in the mind or in God's eyes, those lines of demarcation are very fuzzy, they would say.
So... So the strokes, this is an example of how someone can change.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about some of the latest scientific discoveries, which is very interesting. One of the first things that I read about was the fact that, and this took place in the 60s, was there was a scientist who was able to put like a hat, like the guy sat in a dental chair, and he put a hat and he had all these electrodes coming into the brain and brought it to the visual area. And for a blind person, suddenly that person could see. A blind person who had been blind since birth couldn't see exactly the same as the eye. But in fact, it is the brain that does the seeing, not the eye.
Wow.
The eye is the input, but you can have another input. And as with computers, I mean, all computer information is on or off. It's just two. It's just either it's on or it's off, it's high energy or it's low energy. All computer, basically the computer is made up of just on and off. Well, that's the same thing they did with the eye, with the seeing. Light dark. Now, that was in the 60s, now they have it so small that they can put a, on the tongue, because the tongue actually, if you, there's always dead skin in the rest of our body, but on the tongue there's no dead skin, so the information goes directly in through the tongue. They have a plastic piece with electrodes on it, and they have a tiny television that they can put on eyeglasses.
Oh.
So they get the information from the TV, send it to the input in the tongue, and the person can see.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. So this is the latest research. And the same thing with deaf people.
We need to take a short break.
Okay.
I can't wait to hear about that. I'm so sorry to interrupt you.
Did with the blind. They can do with the deaf. They've had developed, I don't know how you pronounce it, cochlea. Implants to put in the ear. It's not the same as a hearing aid. Hearing aid just makes noises louder. This is actually the same kind of thing where they get electrodes coming in and channeling it to the brain so that a person may start to hear again.
That's incredible.
Yes, this is really the latest thing.
So if you just tuned in, what we're talking about is this new technology that works with stroke victims, people that are blind, people that are deaf, probably many, many other conditions.
Well, the basic idea, which is very revolutionary, it's been going on for a while, but it's a long time, you know, in the science community before things are accepted, is that they used to think that everything in the brain was hardwired, that there was a particular place in the brain that you heard, that you saw, that you speak, the BRCA area where you speak, certain areas, and if that area is damaged, that's it for you. So, for example, I'll just talk about the stroke victims because I think this is really very key to understanding this whole idea of what's going on with the research in the brain. So a stroke victim, you know, the blood supply stops going to a certain area of the brain and those cells die, those brain cells die. So that if the person is then paralyzed, that's it for life. Well, they have found, purely by accident first, you know, somebody just didn't know that that was the reality. And, you know, what we believe really influences, and some other time we should talk about belief and possibility.
Right.
Because if we don't believe something can happen, it probably won't happen. You know, if we suddenly know that prayer works, we can make things happen. And anyway, to get back to the stroke. So he was able to take his father and retrain. His father had a terrible stroke and half his side was paralyzed, and he taught him first through crawling and then walking, and the his father was able to regain all of his ability. In fact, he was mountain climbing when he had a stroke, and when he had a heart attack, and he died, you know, 30 years later. When he died, they actually looked into his brain to see, well, had his brain changed that he could, you know, wasn't paralyzed, and they discovered his brain hadn't changed.
Oh.
That area of the brain that had been deadened by the stroke was still there. So what had happened? Well, the new scientific research shows that there's what they call neuroplasticity of the brain. That is, the brain's constantly in change. That if one area of the brain is not working, and another area of the brain can take over for that. So if you have 100 IQ, you can do certain trainings and get your eye. It's not hardwired for life. They have discovered that there's all kinds of learning and new techniques to allow, whether it's the blind to see or the deaf to hear or stroke victims, to regain their ability. And there's this very specific technique they use with stroke victims. And this is, again, very key about how do we get another area of the brain to start working.
Well, I think
yes,
it's very exciting because you consider we're only using a very small percentage of our brain. And, you know, perhaps as psychics we're using a little bit different percentage.
Yes, yes.
Because we expand out in that way. But there's so much uncharted territory.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the area, the question is, if we're only using, you know, 34% or 5% or whatever it is of our brain, how do we get to use those others? So in this, it's particularly in this, what they discovered with stroke victims is that what happens when you have the stroke is right afterwards you can't move the arm. So the brain says, I can't move the arm, and the arm's paralyzed. And that's it. Then the arm becomes paralyzed. However, what they're doing now is you start using the other arm, right? Because, oh.
Compensate,
and so,
right.
Right, you use the other arm. So what they're doing is something called CI, constrained. They constrain the new arm, the one that can be used. Totally constrain the side that can be used, and they force you to use the parallel side.
Wow.
And that's what then stimulates the brain to, first by imagination, because thinking it actually starts the neurons already working. And if we see it, they also, you know, with those invisible limbs, they have a mirror, they have a whole new contraption where you think you see that hand moving, and then suddenly you could scratch that with the invisible limb phenomena. Anyway, this idea of constraining part of the brain area to allow another part is very key to allowing new aspects of the brain to function. That's what I see. That's what I see as the new inroad and possibility of using more of our brain, as you were talking about.
Wow. And what other types of things in terms of experiments are they doing, for example, with sleep or dreaming or anything of that nature?
Well, that's my own.
Oh, what are you doing?
That's why I say what I like to do is read these new things in science and then say, well, how can I apply that to my life? How can I transport this into what I do? So I say to myself, well, how can I? Because here they're saying that the brain is plastic, that you can open up new areas, and we've heard people talk about the God gene. I mean, in Buddhism, we can all become a Buddha. With the idiot savants, we see that there are people who can do incredible things with numbers, with time. I mean, amazing. So in my way of seeing, we all have that possibility. If one person can access that part of that brain, that means all of our brains
are
wired to have that possibility, right? So when you I say, well, where can this be done? Well, dreaming, we access abilities that we don't have in regular life, or we think we don't have, like flying,
right?
Like creating incredible stories, like making incredible music. So one of my thoughts is that I've been working with is lucid dreaming, where you it takes a while, but you can be aware that you're dreaming in the dream.
Mm.
So, for example, the other night I became aware I was dreaming. I became aware because I keep on falling into these machines that sort of crushed me, and I didn't get crushed. So I said, how come I'm not getting crushed? And so then there was a realization that I was dreaming. So so I said, which I have studied it through some Buddhist dream programs, workshops, and dream yoga. And so you try to see the Buddha. Talk to the Buddha. Wouldn't that be nice? Have
oh,
a conversation
yeah.
with the Buddha. So I say to my mind, Buddha, 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 come, Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. And I just see this big face. It wasn't the Buddha. Buddha. You have to struggle with it, even in the dream. You don't have this total control. But anyway, that's the area that I'm working in to access new possibilities in my mind through dream yoga.
So what you're saying, just let me see if I understand what you're
right.
saying. So in the dream, you were getting crushed in a machine, then you
right.
realized you were not getting crushed. You became
right.
aware you were awake in the dream, and then you wanted to call forth your God-conscious
right.
part of yourself. So you envisioned the image of the Buddha in front of you.
Right, right, right.
To
right.
remind you of your immensity.
No.
No.
To actually talk to the Buddha.
To actually, oh, okay. See, that's why I'm clarifying.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
To talk to the essence of the Buddha.
Well, actually, you know, the one thing about dreams, what's so fascinating is, I mean, talk about, and this has to do with what I started with, about the blind being able to see.
Yes.
We see in our minds. I mean, what more perfect sight do we have when in our dream world we see incredible, perfect visions?
It's true.
Without our
whole
eyes,
world.
Right?
Exactly, whole
and
world.
And worlds we've never been to before. As
Perhaps.
Far as we, well, I mean, as far as we know in this particular lifetime.
Right, because we don't know
other
really
planets.
If we're dreaming while we're awake or we're
right, I mean,
while
I've been on other
asleep.
Planets and other universes, you
mm-hmm.
know. Yes. Yes, it's, anyway, so it's very, very interesting. There's a lot of areas to do experimentation with to get to this next level and open up the mind.
What about the area of meditation with this
Absolutely.
Mind research?
Absolutely.
Was that addressed in the book at all? I mean, it was
no.
a scientific
no,
book.
No, 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 no. They don't talk about that But if you look up on the internet, you will see they are doing all kinds of research nowadays. At the University of Wisconsin, they brought the Dalai Lama there, and they brought some Tibetan monks there, and they put some brain scanners, and they went into deep meditation, and they could see all kinds of things that were happening when these excellent meditators, they created more gamma rays than a normal brain would do, so they can really see that. And that's what I was going to talk about also. Am I talking too fast?
Not for me. I'm the one who got the speeding ticket and moved too fast.
This is so fascinating. I just want to, you know, get everything in this
just
one.
Just squeeze
hour.
It all in. All right, so the Dalai Lama.
But
and remember, the Dalai Lama is coming to Maui April 24th
and 25th.
I love the
Dalai Lama. So what I wanted to say, and I think this is really, so I'm going to talk about this slower because it deserves being focused on. The idea, again, to the stroke victim is that you stop one part of the brain in order to allow another part, or you stop one part of the body in order to allow...
Okay, but I thought we were just on gamma rays.
We are. We're going back. We're going back.
Okay,
I'm just making a link here.
Okay,
a link. There's a link. There's a link.
There's a link.
There's a link. I promise you, there's a link. The link is the constrainment of one thing in order to allow another.
Okay.
And so that's what happens in meditation. We are constraining our automatic monkey mind, that one that...
And the body, too.
In meditation, yes, and the body, too. Keep the body absolutely still.
Mm-hmm.
And with the mind, keep focusing either on the breath or an image so that there is an allowance for another part of the brain to open up.
Oh, got the connection.
Well, this is my theory. Am I, you know?
Right. That absolutely makes sense.
Doesn't it?
Right.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you slow everything down, and that comes into the time thing too. But so when you focus in your meditation, then you're allowing new areas of the brain to open up.
And we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, let's do a little bit of talking about time bending. That's what you were just going to say. That goes into the time thing,
right,
huh?
Right,
and
right.
We're going to talk about time bending. You're listening to Mind, Body, Spirit Inspirational Talk Radio. I'm your host, Leah Howard, and today our guest is Helen Kritzler, also known as Haiku Helen, a wise woman who lives on the cutting edge of world thought and has been a pioneer in social, technological, and cultural movements. She is a psychic and palmist for over 40 years, and her website is www.haikuhelen.com. You can also call Helen at 808-573-6343. That's 573-6343. Now, I want bending.
Uh-huh.
We're talking about brain research and technology, and you've been on the cutting edge of so many different movements, and here we have the new movement of the expansion of the brain.
Yeah. Yeah, research into neuroplasticity, they call it. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
That the brain actually changes. It's not hardwired.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing because it...
So
it,
if someone is obsessive compulsive, mm-hmm. they could actually really change that.
Yeah, I mean, there are various people, and if anybody's interested by this tacity, and there are a lot of schools for dyslexic children and all kinds of things that are going on now that are... there are computer programs that have been developed particularly for areas of the brain so that new areas can be developed for kids who have learning disabilities.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's very exciting. It's really all very new, all of this stuff.
And
so our brains, I mean, it's sort of a little bit like talking about the DNA when they say there's junk DNA. So we know there's DNA that hasn't awakened yet. And that possibly through our using the so-called God gene or the Buddha gene, that aspect of the mind that can go beyond what we understand in the world today through our five senses, that we can get into other places in our mind. It's just a whole new frontier.
And, you know, being that you're a palmist and a psychic, and you live a lot of your life in that right brain realm.
Right.
Just because of that, this brings an incredible balance with the left brain.
Well, I've always been interested in science. I never could understand why people would say, oh, you're this or you're that. To me, I'm a very visual person. And so, actually, like when I was very good in math, and people say, oh, you're an artist, how could you be a mathematician? But to me, they're the same, because to me, I visualize. When I do math, it's a visual thing. I see relationships between things. So to me, the bringing these The only difference between the psychic realm and the scientific realm is that it hasn't been proven yet.
I know.
They don't know how to do experimentations on it. I mean, I was also just reading in the internet when I was thinking about this program, and thank you again so much, because if I didn't have this program to do, I probably wouldn't have been thinking and delving as deeply into this stuff. But I was thinking about hypnotism, because I'm sure you also are a hypnotist, and we know what can be done, incredible things with hypnotism. Why weren't scientists investigating hypnotism all these years? Because they thought it was the roadshow kind of thing. It was never so. They've been in Harvard. They did some experimentations with hypnotism and the brain, and they couldn't get it published for the past 3 years. They finally got it published.
Wow.
Because none of the scientific magazines would publish it, because it was about hypnotism. I mean, there's such prejudice. Anyway, we were going to go back to time, right?
Yeah, we do have time for that.
Do we have time? Anyway, so thinking about time, I think the first important thing when thinking about time is to say, well, what is time? And time is not a measure of time. It's a measure of space. Time, an hour, 24 hours in a day, is the time that it takes the Earth to rotate once on its axis. And a month is the time it takes the moon to travel in a circle. And a year is the time of wherever the Earth is now to come back to this place. So truly, time is a measurement of space.
That's so cool. I never thought of it that
way.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure all of us keep feeling like time is getting faster and faster and faster and faster. Well, what if the whole universe is actually moving faster? Is there any way we would know it, since its relationship of...
Well, it's like the gurus always say, if you're in a plane, you don't feel the plane. But when you land, then you realize you've gone somewhere.
Exactly. So how would we know? I don't know. I mean, I know they even measure time with the movement of a molecule now. I think they use an electron. But still, that could be going faster if the whole... if as the universe is expanding, and they say the universe is expanding... Well, if the universe is expanding, you would expect time to maybe go slower. The distances are greater. But maybe it's going... Anyway, it's hard to know scientifically. But true time for us is psychological time.
Right. Well, right. So many of us run around feeling hurried, rushing here and there, and feeling like I want to get everything into this life that I can possibly get in, and I want the quality and rushing here and there. I mean, you know.
Right. And the more we rush, the faster time goes.
Ah.
Have you noticed? That's very interesting.
Well, I did this amazing rebirthing session once. And if you don't know what rebirthing is, it's a conscious breathing where each breath, you have to focus on each breath going in and out of your nostrils. And it's an amazing process. If you haven't done it, I highly recommend it, conscious rebirthing breathing. And at the end of the session, I realized the affirmation for me was, there is enough time for me. Because I'd lived my life rushing, raising 4 children, and as a single parent for the past almost 14 years, trying to be in too many places at once and doing too many things at once and balancing and juggling too many everything at once between doing my business and teaching school and raising children and trying to be the best at everything. And that was my affirmation after this rebirthing session, where time stops,
exactly.
Literally.
Exactly.
Time felt like it stood still. Mm. I had been breathing for, I think, 2 hours. It felt like maybe 15 minutes, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such an awareness for me. And ever since then, it might not be noticeable yet on the outside, but I have slowed down and I have become aware. Whenever I feel like I'm rushing, I say, like, I was a few minutes late mm-hmm. for you, but I said, there is enough time for me. Mm-hmm. I had to pay that speeding ticket. I know that seems incongruent, but,
right.
But you know, there is. And we were fine. We got it all done.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking about, you know, what you were saying, that experience. Because if I think about, when does time go slow? Well, time goes slow when we take a vacation for a week in a new place.
Until the last day.
And we and we see new things. So the question is, so why does time go slower when you're seeing a new thing? Or why does time go slower when you're a child? So my answer was that when the mind is taking in new information, when the mind is accessing and aware of, oh, look at that tree, oh, look at that, oh, look at these new people, oh, I've never seen a mountain like that, then time slows down because we're aware of that moment. Usually in our automatic day, we go into daydream. We go into daydream, an hour could go past, it's like, woo, what happened to that past hour? Well, we weren't aware, we weren't conscious. We weren't, as you were saying, when you were doing that breathing, you were aware in every moment.
Every moment.
As you breathed in and out. And then psychological time expands because we're focused and our mind is being aware. So when we're learning new things and new neurons, I mean, and this is part of this brain science, new neurons are being created, new connection dendrites, they call them. Brains have branches. Each of the neurons have branches that go out. And the more we focus on something, the more we learn something new, the more of these branches are created and the more of the neurons are created in that area of our brain. And so then time expands out for us.
Now, I wonder how all this brain research ties into the development of the heart and the ability to love.
Well, you know, this wasn't in any of the books, but in Deepak Chopra, when I went to his...
the seminar last week?
Yes. He had a whole area about love.
Really?
And it was very interesting. And because it's, again... when you think of the mind, of the brain changing, it changes with love. In fact, there is something actually in this book about it. There are different chemicals that are emitted in the brain. It's not Oxycontin, I know. It's like heroin or something. But it has a name, something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, that is emitted when you're in love. Different kind of hormones that are emitted. And Deepak Chopra was saying, you know, synchronicity happens much more when you're in love. You sort of get out of the ego of yourself when you're in love, and giggles and laughter and a whole new exchange. You certainly see it with mothers and children. You know that I remember watching my sister, whose personality actually changed, I noticed, when she had her third baby. And there was so much love, at least from my point of view, between her and her baby that she just blossomed in a new way that I had never seen her blossom before. And you see that with people in love. Suddenly they're just emitting a whole new part of themselves.
So you're saying that the brain is actually changing as well.
Yes. Yes, the brain is changing when you fall in love. Different chemicals, different hormones, different areas, I'm sure, of your neurons. You can learn different kinds of things. You ever notice somebody who was stuck in a certain pattern of thinking? I remember I had a girlfriend who I used to discuss politics when we were like 21, and I could never get her to change a point of view. Well, she met some guy, you know, who was a radical. And after 1 weekend, she came back and she was spouting these things to me. I said, wait a minute, I spent 2 years trying to talk to you about this stuff. But when she fell in love, she was totally open to having her ideas changed, to open to listening and taking in, because she trusted. And I think trust and love open up our minds and probably open up new areas in our brains.
All right, we need to take a flight. So, Helen, let's talk a little bit more. Oh, we have a caller. I'm so sorry. Somebody called during the break. I want to give you the number here, 242-7800. Hello.
Hello there, Leah.
Hi, who's this?
There's Lawrence.
Hi, Lawrence. Do you have a question or comment for us?
Yeah, actually, this matter of time bending been a very interesting subject for me in the past, and also to some others. Robin Williams and Paul Simon.
Mm.
Really?
Robin Williams said, why do they call it rush hour when nothing moves? And Paul Simon wrote the song, had the words, the nearer your destination, the more your slips slide in the way.
Mm.
Ah.
Now, it's a very interesting thing about time, because we live essentially in a timeless moment within which everything happens,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I seem to have deduced is this, that to the degree our attention is trapped in experiencing within that timeless moment, time seems to slow down. So think of being in a boring classroom where you're trapped. Things get very thick and heavy, and it seems to take forever.
Mm-hmm.
Or the dentist chair.
Or the dentist chair. On the other hand, if you're with somebody that you've been from, someone you've been wanting to hear from, your attention is trapped in that desire.
Mm-hmm.
Time seems to drag. But when we're in the flow, and we're not resisting experience, and we're not seeking other than what we're experiencing, we fall into the timeless present. And then time seems to speed along.
Well, I don't know if it speeds along. I mean, I would say that you, when you really totally enter into the moment, like in that Power of Now book, when you really enter into the moment, and we really know that that's the only thing that really exists is this present moment. Everything else is an illusion, you know, past or future. So when you really enter and you're totally in that present moment, I think time can expand for you, actually. I wouldn't call it a drag. I would call it, you know, unless it's like the dentist chair, but it can be exhilarating.
Well, that's the nature of it. When we lose density, things lighten up and we seem to be flowing, not to be slowed in the sense of dragging us down, but seems very light and free.
Thank you. Thanks for listening and sharing your insight on time. We have another caller, so keep listening. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, and your name, please?
Great. My name is Wendy. It's a wonderful program.
Oh, thanks so much for listening. What comments or questions do you have for Helen?
Well, lots of them, but I'll stick to one.
Okay.
I had a stroke, and I spent my stroke on the phone with my best friend, who's also a healer.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
And when I got to the doctor, it was a weekend, which is not a good time to have a stroke. And when I got to the doctor on the following Monday, after 3 days lying in my bathtub without water, trying to do the rebirth breathing and talking to my friend, he said, there's hardly any sign of it.
Wow.
I'd like Helen to... Do you think that talking to somebody who you completely trust and love and who's completely there for you could actually ward off a stroke?
Well, you know, they do if they catch the stroke in time and they're able to prevent some of the blood to damaging, they can actually help. And it sounds to me that what happened was that your friend she loved you and you loved her, it could have been emitting hormones or chemicals of that love and that trust that actually helped limit the amount of your stroke. So I think that was just really wonderful. And it's a great story. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling in with that story,
Wendy.
That
was beautiful. That was beautiful.
Again, the number here at the studio is 242-7800 or statewide 866-982-7800. And we are talking about the new brain channels. And we were just talking a little bit about time and how the body changes, the brain changes. Mm-hmm. And anything else that you want to add to that, Helen?
Well, there's so many different things. One of the things that I was thinking about, and this is pure conjecture on my part, but I was thinking about, you know, we're aware of our five senses.
Right.
What if there are other senses that we're not aware of? I mean, a blind person doesn't know what it is to see, and a hearing deaf person doesn't know what it is to hear. So maybe there are many senses that we're not aware of. And so I thought to myself, well, how could we discover if there are other senses? And then I thought about the word instinct. It's always bothered me, that word, when they look at animals and they say, well, that's an instinct. I mean, here are these brilliant things that these animals can do. The whales know to come here. The birds fly across half the globe. A dog can find its way even here on Maui. You know, it's amazing, and we call it instinct, and therefore we stop thinking about it, really looking at it. So I started to think to myself, well, it may be that if we really study animals, we may discover that there are instincts that we don't know anything about. And then once we discover them, maybe we can open those up in our own minds. So this is,
so
you know, as I said, this
in
is
humans.
Huh?
Instincts in humans.
Yes. Yes.
Well, everyone on Maui had that instinct to come here, right?
That's right.
That was our natural home.
Yes, yes,
tendency.
Yes. Well, you know, extrasensory, you know, we call it ESP, right?
Right.
But, you know, a lot of these abilities, I think we can, if we focus in on them, again, by focusing in on them, and it's also, this comes into this area where you're talking about belief. You know, or, you know, like the new one, the law of attraction, the secret. I mean, suddenly if you tell people praying works, or you tell people, if you think about it, you can attract it to you. And then people start to do it, and it starts to happen. But if you don't believe it, and if you don't believe that you can do something, or you don't believe you can read somebody else's mind, or you don't believe you can jump rope, or you don't believe you can speak Spanish, or you don't believe you can write, or you don't believe whatever, you won't do it. And guess what? You won't be able to do it. So much of what we can do in life depends upon what our mind is open to.
And how much, and that movie, The Secret, also talked about the passionate emotional content behind it. Right. Okay, we have a caller. Okay. Hello. Hi, you're on the air. Your name, please.
My name's Fred.
Hi, Fred.
And anyway, I totally agree with what she was saying, expanding, and I really respect.
Oh, you're breaking up. You're breaking up. Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We're having trouble hearing you.
Join your show on how time seems to expand. I totally agree.
Well, yeah.
Well, thank you, Fred, for calling. It's those cell phones, yeah.
I wanted to say one other thing. I think this comes from Deepak Chopra, but it was a quote I'd like to say, which was, I thought was great, is that consciousness evolves through imagination.
Consciousness evolves through imagination.
And I thought that was really beautiful, because if we let our minds expand and go further and further out, then we can create what we think.
Yes, and that's why I had all four of my kids watch that movie, The Secret. Helen, our show is coming to a close. Anything you want to say in closing?
Well, I just would like to tell everybody that they can contact me if they're interested in any of these things. They can email me, and I can give them references if they want to, you know, for their kids or for themselves.
Oh, yes, so let's tell you also, you're a palmist. You've been doing that for over 40 years. So if you see her in person, you can get a palm reading. And you can also do phone readings, psychic readings, over the phone.
Yes.
And her number is 808-573-6343. And please visit her website at www.haikuhelen.com.